Tonight is term four, session five, and it is Megillus Keheles. And last time we got to Perek Tes, Pasuk Tes. That's chapter 9, verse 9. And this is really, really a special pasuk because of something that we have to learn to make sure that we understand it even, you know, correctly at all. So we'll go straight into it. What does it say? Re'ei Chaim im ha'isha asher ahavta. See life with the wife you love. Kol yemei chayei chevlecha. All the futile days of your life. Asher nosan lecha tachas ha'shemesh. That you've been granted, or that he has granted you, under the sun, kol yemei chevlecha, all your futile days. Notice it says kol yemei chevlecha here. Well, it said kol yemei chayei chevlecha above. He's changed the syntax. Ki hu chelkecha b'chaim, for that is your portion in life. Uva amolcha asher ata amel tachas ha'shemesh. And that's your toil with which you have to exert yourself, or toil under the sun. So let's just read that again, just in English. See life with the wife you love, all the futile days of your life that he has granted you under the sun, all of your futile existence, for that's your portion in life, and in your toil which you exert under the sun. Does that mean only people who are married can get anything done? Clearly not true. So it can't be talking about a regular wife. What are we on about here? What are we talking about? We're going to need to dig in on several levels to make sure that at least we get a basic understanding of the wisdom encoded in this particular pasuk. Now, we saw earlier in Perek Hay, the fifth perek, in Psukim Yud Zayin to Yud Ches 17 through 18, that before a soul departs from its body, it is shown all the rewards, a person is shown all the reward that they've earned in their lives while in this world. Now remember, why was that? That was to calm the guf down, that it's not all over. Don't worry, there's a good reason why you're going through the death process now. It'll all be okay. You're not going to lose out. And we discussed this at length back there. If you're interested, please go back to the recording that we did about that at length to discuss what's going on and why in that particular idea that Hashem shows the Neshama and Guf together a bit of their reward so they feel more comfortable. So we mentioned the story of Rav Avahu, who was shown 13 rivers of oil, scented oil, and the Zohar Kodesh, I think that we also quoted there, which is in the first volume on page 99, says that through the life that a man leads, you find that essentially the majority of your life is futile. But the days you spend toiling in Tyra and obeying Ratzon Hashem are not wasted. Those days you get to keep. And they remain eternally as a testimony to a life that was filled with Torah and mitzvahs. They say, look, I was made on such and such a day, at such and such a time, by this person. And they come forward at his death, and they show just how much good has come from this person as a result of all their labor in the world. That's what we said back in 5:17 through 18. Now coming back to 9:9, which is where we're holding. What's this wife? What is this wife? Who's this wife? Well, you got to go see the Ma'ov Shemesh on Parsha Shoftim. Parsha Shoftim, which is in Devarim, which is Deuteronomy, and it is Perek Chof. It's the 20th chapter. And we're talking about the Musa Shmuz, I don't know, what is it before when a general approaches his soldiers before they go to battle, he gives them a pep talk, some kind of words of inspiration and chizuk to get on with the job. Similar to, I guess, a coach in half-time pushing his team onward. So that's very famous now. All armies do that. It's expected that before they go, someone's going to say something. Well, where do they get that idea from? They get it from the Torah. Look into the Torah and it says, when you go out to battle against your enemy and you see horse and chariots, a people more numerous than you, you shall not fear them. For Hashem your God is with you, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. It shall be that when you draw near to the war, the Kohen shall approach and speak to the people. Notice, it's our priests, our spiritual conduits, which address us at a time of distress. These are not necessarily top military analysts. He shall say to them, hear, O Israel, you are coming near to battle against your enemies. Let your heart not be faint. Do not be afraid and do not panic and do not be broken before them. For Hashem your God is the one who goes with you to fight for you with your enemies, to save you. The officers then have to go round the people and they have to ask a few questions. And they say, who is the man who has built a new house and not inaugurated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the war, and another man will inaugurate it. And then they say, these officers run round the troops, who is the man who's planted a vineyard and not redeemed it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in war, and another man will redeem it. And who is the man who's betrothed a woman and not married her? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in war and another man may marry her. From here, as well as other sources, we learn that you may well end up marrying a woman who was not actually your zivug. It was someone else's zivug. Perfectly acceptable. It's not definite that you're going to marry. Every man has seven zivugim anyway. You aren't probably going to marry seven wives, and your wife isn't going to marry seven men, you one of them. So clearly you're always marrying someone else's zivug. It's a very complicated system. You should see them at Erie on Sota, base Amud base, for a very big discussion regarding Shimshon and Delil, Samson and Delilah, who clearly was not a zivug, yet he married her and fulfilled his life mission with her. So we see that marrying your besher to your zivug is, you never know if you have. It's irrelevant. And it doesn't matter if you have or you haven't. You can still live a full good life with whoever it is you marry, as long as there's goodwill on both sides and you fulfill your life mission or utilize what you could on both ways. But even if you don't, you could still fulfill your life mission, just be much harder. Okay, then the officers shall continue speaking to the people, saying, this is the last thing they say, who is the man who's fearful and faint-hearted? Which is a strange thing to say at the onset of war. Everyone's fit. Let him not melt. Let him go and return to his house. Let him not melt the heart of his fellows like his heart. It'll be contagious. Fear's contagious on a battlefield. If one man starts panicking, everyone will start panicking like a rot. When the officers are finished speaking to the people, the leaders of the legion shall take command of the head of the people. Now, there's a very famous Chiloni, anti-Frum, cartoon that was made many years ago, lampooning the Frum with these very psukim, saying, ha ha, imagine an Israeli army where you said this to all these people, who would be left? And they had two old men on Zimmer frames. One was the Shragas Aria and one was the Chazanish. And all the strong men had run home because they were scared. Look at that. You know, you can't have a couple of bunch of geriatrics going to war. We need a proper army. And this is what the Torah says we need. Well, that's ridiculous. So they showed it to the Ger Rebbe. They said, look at what they've written. He goes, they're quite right. He goes, that's absolutely right. That's exactly what the battlefront would look like. He goes, here's the issue. The Shragas Aria and the Chazanish did indeed win. They rebuilt Torah in their respective communities. Truthfully, God only wants those who are completely stout of heart in battle. He'll do the rest. He's fighting for you anyway. He only needs those who are completely sin-free, have no worry or guilt, and aren't worried that some sin is going to catch up with them on the battlefield. If you're a tzaddik, you go out there, you can be an old geriatric. It's okay, God will organize it. As long as someone's there doing something. You know what I'm saying? There was that idea of you just throw, you know, with the Elio, just throw hay in a direction and it'll turn to arrows. Someone's got to be there to do something, but he's got to be a tzaddik. You know what I mean? Get me an Eliyahu and get him to chuck hay. Or Eliezer Eved Avraham. He'll chuck, you know, earth at the Canaanite kings and they'll turn into missiles. It's fine. I've only got two people. Avraham and Eliezer, good enough. I'll do the rest. But someone's got to be there who's completely sin-free. Who's 100% Baal Tshuva. They're absolutely clean. They've got a clean slate with God. That's what we ended up saying last time. A clean slate. Always keep your account clean, a white linen sheet. Keep it clean with God. You're clean with him, you've got nothing to worry about, as we will learn in the further Pesukim. Why am I telling you any of this? The Al Shech HaKadosh and the Ma'or V'Shemesh both read these Pesukim. Even though they're accurate, practically in Pshat, going to war, and that's what had to be done, there's a very big drush. There's a very big moral, ethical limud that's coming out of these Pesukim. When you go to battle against your enemy, who's your enemy? Of course, it's the Yetzer Hara. And you see horse and chariot. Boy, is he well armed. That's a dangerous enemy. A people more numerous than you, he's got every single trick in the book to come and attack you. The Neshama should be terrified. Don't fear them, says Hashem, because I'm personally with you. You won't be able to win this war against the Yetzer Hara unless I'm standing by your side. Your big worry is not winning the war. Your big worry is keeping me by your side to win it for you. You lose me, you lose everything. I brought you up from the land of Egypt. Don't forget, I can do this. It shall be that when you draw near to the war, when you actually engage with your Yetzer Hara, the Kohen, who is a euphemism for God, shall speak up be to the people. He shall say to them, "Hear, O Israel." Now listen to this. This is the Ma'or V'Shemesh now. You are coming near to the battle against your enemies. Let your heart be not faint. Don't be afraid. Don't panic. You're going to be able to overcome the Yetzer Hara. Don't be broken before them. Because Hashem, your God, is the one who's going to go with you to fight with you. Your enemies say he's going to fight the Yetzer Hara with you. Then the officers have to say, who's the man who's built a new house and not inaugurated it? What does this mean? There are elements of the soul. There's six elements of the soul. Three are mentioned in this section. The lowest element is a physical element of the soul called the nefesh, the life force, and it is the outcome of a fully working brain. A fully working brain develops a human consciousness, which is the most ethereal of all physical things, but it is not spiritual. We learn this very clearly in Derech Hashem. It's brought in the Kabbalistic Svarim. Basically, it rots and dies at death. It's like an animal. Like a horse or a cow or a chimpanzee or a bonobo. Bonobos have been taught 200 words in facilitating communication. That's good enough to hold a decent conversation. It's a nefesh. It is the outcome of an advanced creature's life force. That's the house that you live in. The neshama has to live in a body, as it were, and that body is animated by something called a nefesh. That's the house. Who is the man who's planted a vineyard? This is very deep. Why a vineyard? A vineyard is grapes. And grapes, according to the Zohar Kodesh, was the fruit of the Eitz Hadas Tovara, the fruit of the knowledge of good and bad in the Garden of Eden. And that sin was all based on Loshon Hara against God, Rechilas against God. So we see that the vineyard is an allusion to the ruach, the spirit of the soul, which is a spiritual concept, not a physical concept, which gives humans the divine ability to speak. Other animals and trees communicate, no doubt about it. Complicated communication is available, but not speech like us. That is a divine gift. So the vineyard alludes to the ruach. Who is the man who has betrothed a woman? What's the woman? The neshama. Now, what are we learning from this? When you go to war against the Yetzer Hara, when you toil under the sun on this earth, you'd better be ready. Because if not, you could die in battle, spiritually. And your neshama components will be redistributed to other people to enjoy, and you won't get anything. That's what we're playing for here. Unless you do tshuva on your nefesh, unless you're metaken and fix up your ruach, and unless you protect your soul, those spiritual elements will be pickings for bigger tzaddikim who will literally have you as an enhancement to their Olam HaBo experience. This is a very serious concern. When it means go home, lest someone else get that, that means sit over your deeds, think about it, do tshuva and fix it so you can keep it. Keep the house, keep the vineyard, keep the wife, keep the nefesh, keep the ruach, keep the neshama. We don't want you to lose anything. We want you to make as intact as possible. You shouldn't lose a drop of the spirituality that you've got. You are that individual. You shouldn't lose anything. Keep wholesome and complete. Make sure every element of your being, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, everything is in the best shape it can be in. Because otherwise, you're going to lose it. And someone else is going to just pick it off. Someone you never met. They're just going to take it. This can happen in war. And we're in the ultimate war here. The ultimate war is the war against the Yetzer Hara. And Hashem is warning you through the Torah Kadosh itself, explains the Mor v'Shemesh. And the Al Shekodesh takes a very similar slant and says you can lose elements of your own being because you can ruin them. This is straight out of Shaftim. Right out of Devarim, right out of Deuteronomy. Now we need to understand, therefore, there are multiple components to the soul, nefesh, ruach, neshama. Beyond that, there's chaya, and then yechido. But the nefesh, ruach, neshama is the ones that we have most contact with. The chaya and yechido are almost abstract, they're so lofty. We have very little anything to do with them. The neshama is as high as it gets. The Rambam, said in his day, the neshama only dips into the body at Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur, because we're so lowly. His yahrzeit was over 1,000 years ago. And that was in his day. He says people have dropped to such a level that they're hardly having it. Only when you're doing a mitzvah or an Ne'ilah Yom Kippur. Apart from that, you don't even have connection with you. Used to be that you walk around with your shamar all day. All right, what does that mean for us? Don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But that's the idea. The point is that certainly, if the neshama is almost out of bounds, how much more so the chayin yechidah, which are theoretical, essentially. They're there, but, you know. What we really need to think about is those lower three elements, the neshama, the ruach, and the nefesh going down, all right? All of those are up for grabs, which means your main life mission is keeping those three bits intact. Let's come back to Keheles 9.9. Ra'ei ha'chaim im isha asher ahavta. Of course, Solomon knows all this cold. It's like so obvious for him. He was so well-versed in wisdom and profundity that a simple sentence for him was always replete with the reveal and the hidden was one to him. Everything, he's got everything on a plate. See life with the wife you love, all the futile days of life that you've been granted under the sun. Who's the wife? Who's betrothed maiden? Who's the wife? It's the neshama. It's the neshama. The wife mentioned in this pasuk is the neshama. You have to live life in this futile world in order to earn a life in Olam Haba. We know that. We've been saying it over and over again since the first perek. Now, what happens when the chips are down? If a person has sinned, but he later did tshuva, he repented, and he made an atonement for his evil before the end of his life, only the days in which he did good deeds, since he repented, come forward. and he's lost all the days that he didn't. The earlier days are of no value since he spent them in sin. Therefore, they're not going to come forward and say, oh, I'm a good guy. They don't exist. There's an idea that Rabbi Akiva did tshuva at the age of 39. There's an idea that Rabbi Akiva and the Ramchal, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, are buried next to each other in Tiberias. It's not a graveyard. It's a hill. But they're the only two people buried there. It's a very known thing that the Ramchal died at the age of 39, and many Rabbonim have opined that the Ramchal came to atone for the first 39 years of Rabbi Akiva's life. That's why they're buried next to each other, because it's only right they should be next to each other. It's one and the same person. Now, why is this necessary? Answer, because only the days, you love all the days of your life. What are these days of your life? Those are the energies which you made that come forward to promote you in heaven. The first 39 years or days of Rabbi Akiva's life don't count. Well, that's not, I mean, look, he became probably one of, if not the greatest Tanaim who ever lived. I mean, he's like the Baal Tshuva hero for every generation after him. He is it. I mean, he's as good as it gets. He wrote Avinu Malkeinu. He wrote Kaddish. Yeah, Ameni Heshmei Rabba, those are his words. Yeah, I mean, it's just the most important Jewish response outside of Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Aleinu, right? I mean, it's like so important. Those that talk through Kaddish, their faces will look green in Olam Haba. Everyone will say, oh, look at them. They talk through Kaddish. Be stained forever. He wrote Kaddish. He wrote Avinu Malkeinu. His first 39 days, nothing. Well, we've got to make that up. Up comes the Ramchal. So that Rabbi Akiva can say, every day of my life mattered. 39 from here, the first 39 from there. It's necessary. It's like a necessary thing. Now, what happens if you don't need that? Every day of his life has been good. From Bar Mitzvah until Kvura, from the time that he became an adult until the time he's buried, he ain't done anything wrong. Then all of his days are gathered and they act as eternal witnesses to the incredible wealth that he's achieved during his lifetime. It's far better to be rich from all of one's days than only a few of them. That's why it says, all of your futile existence, kol yemei chevlecha. When it says, see life with the wife you love, see life with your soul. If it's still within you, your life will be shown to you. This may be where the goyim get the idea, before you die, your life passes in front of your eyes. It's not so much as if your life passes in front of your eyes, the reward of your life will pass in front of your eyes. Now, for someone that only lived for their physical life, their reward was what they did during their lifetime. Indeed, they would see all the days of their life passed in front of their eyes, because that's it. This is a terrifying concept. If there's an idea that, you know, you saw your whole life passed in front of your eyes, that could be the worst thing to see, because that's your reward, is what you just lived, because that's how you lived it. You lived it for itself. That's what you get. Not so for a tzaddik. A tzaddik didn't live life for life's sake here on earth. He lived life only for Rotzon Hashem and Olam Haba. In which case, he'll see a reward, which is eternal, pass in front of his eyes. That's a very different thing to see before death. So if you hear a goy genuinely saying in interval, it's true, I saw my whole life pass in front of my eyes. You know, I got married, my first children, my first house that I bought, my holidays. And he actually gets a fast forward replay of all of that. That is an unimaginable confession of uselessness. As a Torah Jew, you should just pity that individual no end and think about what really matters in the universe. A frum yid should see some kind of spiritual revelation that his life was worth. Terrifying idea, right? I mean, really, like, a profound and terrifying idea. You reap what you sow, right? The Goyim say that. So this life generally consists of futile days. But now that someone like this has utilized his time to perform so many mitzvahs and good deeds, that all his life will be imbued with a tremendous aura. The days that he's lived will come alive again and possess the potential to acquire for him an infinite amount of pleasure of getting close to Hashem. That's the ultimate pleasure there is. Every other pleasure is limited. God is an unlimited being. See life while you are still with the soul which you love. You'll see all the futile days of your life, and not only a part of them, because someone who repents halfway through his life or something only sees a part of his life. Says Solomon, be the kind of guy that keeps all the days of his life. Don't end up trying to say, oh, well, I'll be a Baal Tshuva. I've got news for you. You lose everything prior to the Tshuva. It's all gone. Don't be like that, says Solomon. Solomon says, get on the boat as soon as you can. That's the greatest wisdom he can impart. He's teaching you to improve your lot. It's so obviously simple when you plug this data in. But if you were to read this verse and its translation straight, I mean, it sounds like he's talking like some kind of marriage guidance counsel or something like that. It's got nothing to do with that. That's not what he means. For that is your portion in life. Ki hu chelkecha b'chaim v'amalacha asher ata amal tachas hashamesh. It's your toil which you exert under the sun here in the physical world. Under the sun just means this world. Physical world, yeah? Within the physical universe, you're under the sun's rays. These days are shown to a person that will give him chizuk, uplift, during the death process to show him the reward in the next world, because all Israel has a portion in Olam Haba. That's a famous Mishnah in Sanhedrin, in the 10th Perek. It's also a Mishnah in Avos. But the amount of bliss that's been apportioned to the soul is directly proportional to the toil in which you exerted under the sun. Lefum Sara Agra, according to the exertion is the reward, says the Mishnah in Avos. These Mishnayos are stolen. And then their names of the Mishnayos are ripped away because they're too Jewish. And they're said over in Masonic lodges as words of wisdom. Terrible. And you know what? It'll go nowhere. Because once you use the Torah as a spade to dig, you'll fade away. That's another Mishnah in our voice. You want to learn Torah, you've got to do it the right way. Any dibbling and dallying in Torah, which is not done sincerely and is done for ulterior motives, won't get you anywhere. It's like learning physics. It may contain good information, but it will not perfect your soul or perfect the universe. You want to learn Torah, do it with all your heart, all your soul, with all your sincerity, and it will... Torah is like a flame. Eish Torah is like a flame. When you get a pot that's treif, it's got bleus, absorptions inside the wall of the pot. You have to heat it up, either in boiling water or in fire, and that expunges the treif bleus, the non-kosher absorptions that have adhered inside the walls of the pot. We all have treif ablius inside the walls of our pot. We've all got non-kosher absorptions inside of our bodies. How do you expunge them? What flame do you put to the body in order to be able to get it out? Tyra. The Eish of Tyra, if applied correctly, kashers the kli of the guf. It's got to be correctly applied. It's got to be done under rabbinic supervision. You want to kasher a kitchen? Get rabbis to do it. You want to kasher a guf? You want to kasher a neshama? Get rabbis to do it. Don't go to a Masonic lodge or any other place that steals the Torah for its own nefarious purposes to give itself meaning. You'll find that all over the place, even in the East. You want to kasher up? The Torah can kasher you and make you a clean pot. You're going to need it. As if that wasn't deep enough, let's go deeper. Let's, you know, because that really, that's pshat. that's the basic understanding of that verse. And unless you're Solomon and you've got, remember when he says these things like live the life with a wife, you know, he means you're neshom. Why is my neshom with a wife? Ah, you better learn shoftim. It's like elementary 101, you know, it's like, it's just to hold in a conversation with Solomon, you would have to be so, so erudite. There's just so much data. His words are just so replete. It's incredible. Let's go deeper. We said that these companions are the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, the house, the vineyard, and the wife, or the woman. Now, the woman is more cherished than the vineyard, and the vineyard is more cherished than the house. I'm going to say something, because it's straight out of Aush HaKadosh. I don't need to freak out. I'm going to say the words, because I'm going to say the words. What we do with the words, I'm not so sure. It's better you hear them. Not everyone is entitled to a neshama. What he means by that is not everyone is entitled to an attachment to the neshama that has been allotted to their fetus. Some people sever their connection to their own souls. It is reserved, this connection is reserved only for those who are righteous enough to merit it through perfecting their souls. Even those who are extremely saintly must work very hard until they're ready for their neshama connection. See life with the wife you love. Bez Hashem, one day, if you love your neshama enough, you'll get to see life with her. Who knows? Maybe you won't. Maybe if you don't connect to your neshama, you'll be soulless. And you'll be one of those people floating about Olam Haba that maybe have a nefesh or a ruach, but no neshama. You better take this seriously. You better take it really seriously. Solomon is telling us, I told you before, or in the fifth parak, that you've got to strive diligently to achieve good results. He's been saying this a lot. Now he's adding, Koheles is teaching us, additionally, in this pasuk, that not only will your efforts be rewarded in Olam Haba, after your soul gets there, but see life with the wife, with the neshama you love, i.e. that you've craved all the days of your life. With a neshama associated with you, your existence is considered life. Without the wife, without the neshama, it's like you're dead while you're alive. If it's without your wife, then all your days are a futile existence. The days of your life can only be acquired with the help of the divine gift of your neshama. See life, says Koheles, with the soul that has been allotted to you, so that you can enjoy and experience life in this world and the next. Otherwise, your days of your life are utterly futile under the sun. All your existence will be futile. Here, in this world, chasing after material pursuits, and there in the next world, you'll be worthless. For this is your portion in life, to chap onto your own neshama. And that's your toil that you've been sent for to exert yourself with while you're here on planet Earth under the sun. That's Keheles speaking. That's the message of Keheles. Don't waste a moment. Come on, that's intense. I told you it's a special pasuk. That's just unbelievable. For that is your portion. That's what God said us. Ki hu chelkecha. Behind. That's your portion in your life. A bit morbid, no? No. He's giving you the best advice possible. You're here. You've got an unbelievable opportunity. An incredible opportunity. You're going to squander that because you like athletics. That's what you're going to do? You're going to do track and field events. You're going to worship coloured discs hanged around your neck. That's what you're... Then keep it. Cheer them on. Here's something really deep. This is deep. What is the ultimate portion that's really set aside for someone worthy? A Jew or a Gentile? A Gentile if they did Shefer Mitzvahs Menei Noach, and a Jew if they did Tarig Mitzvahs. What really is the ultimate portion for any human? The answer is God himself. What you're really working for is a relationship with him. Everything else is secondary. There's nothing more important than that in the entire gamut of life. All Torah, all mitzvahs, everything is only there to develop that relationship. Your ultimate gain is your relationship with God. Now, I say, well, I don't care about it. Don't give us soldiers. You don't understand. Before you were born, you had a relationship with God. After you're born, you had a relationship with God. During your life, you had a relationship with God. After you die, you're going to have a relationship with God. At the resurrection, you're going to have a relationship with God. In Olam Haba, you've got a relationship with God. It's the only thing which is stable. Everything else shifts. Your real chelek, your real portion that's yours, is the level of relationship you have carved with the Borei Olam, with the creator of the universe. What that is really yours. That's the portion you set up. You're not going to get it all, because he's infinite. You're going to get what you can get of it. He's not going to give himself to you. You're going to gain alignment to him. Directly proportional to how much you've worked. That's why it says, in Eicha, Lamentations 3:24, the Lord is my portion. And in Tehillim, Psalms 119:57, my portion is the Lord. Hashem is my chelek. That's the truth. That's what it means, for that is your portion in life, is whatever you manage to get of access to him. What's the best way you're going to get this? Stick with your neshama. You're going to need it. Well, it's not so posh. I might not merit much. So merit it. Gee whiskers. So get it. Well, that's difficult because I'll tell you, bing, I'm going off. True story. I'm going off. Someone just complained to me about something. I got to go. I need to vent. I need this time. You know, I also need some time. You know what I mean? Guy came up to me and he said he went up to a friend of his in shul, and his sons were very, he had two sons, has two sons. They're very involved in shul and development in shul, and they haven't been there for ages. I don't know, we've gone off the derech, who knows what's going on. They're going, what's where are his sons? You know, his sons are around. So he said, I haven't seen your son in shul, especially over Shabbos. They're always here for Shabbos. What's going on? So he shrugged his shoulders and said, my wife is insistent they do French GCSE. And this is the only day we can get a French tutor in. What can I do? His stupid wife has decided that taking a GCSE language is more important, even from her view, forget eternity, from a socio-cultural ethnic connection which can only be gained on Saturdays, but from a mystical point of view, from Chayei Olam Haba. And he is so weak to let that just slide. And that's where those boys are, doing French GCSE tuition. That's where it is. Bing, I'm coming back. What would Solomon say to that? What would Keheles see through his lenses, through his binoculars, through his glasses, spectacles? How would he view that? Says, unfortunately, you've traded your neshama for whatever. It could be ballet, it could be the cinema, it could be football, it doesn't matter. You've traded something utterly worthless and temporal for that which is utterly eternal and priceless. You've made a very bad investment. And the problem is that while you make such investments, you damage your soul connection. And the thing is, without your soul next to you, without your wife, your soul next to you, you're very unlikely to be able to make good, informed decisions in the future, because you're going to be only pulled after the goof. It becomes a spiral like a vortex, which is incredibly difficult to extricate yourself from. Solomon is protesting at this with these verses, which would go over your head unless you learn it with a mefushim. These words don't mean anything straight. They mean so much, but they're knotted up. But this is what he's talking about. Don't lose your own wife, your own neshama, for what? A French GCSE. Let's say they both get nines. Now what? So what? Oh, they could get a better job. Could they? If it isn't the French, it's going to be something else. If you've been privileged to be imbued with a neshama and it becomes an integral part of your being, then that's a portion in life. That's something worth getting. God will then desire to be in his company. This is a guy that's spiritually intact. Why should I want to hang around with a person who's sharded up? And Hashem will draw him closer to himself, because he'll want to be in the presence of such a wonderful person. Whether you're toiling in Torah or attending to business matters under the sun, just be sure to identify with an neshama. Keep in mind that you're a servant of Hashem and you have to carry out his will, be it with a siddur or with a balance sheet or with carpentry tools or with a scalpel or a pen or tefillin or matzah, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Just put Hashem first. You have to keep all your worldly affairs to a minimum, working just enough in order to survive, because these matters are not one's prime concern. The Chofetz Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was a greengrocer. And he had calculated how much money he needs to make to cover his overheads and make a profit. Once he hit that profit, he shut the shop and went to the Beis Medrash. No, it's 9 to 5. There's more profit to be made. Remember, they asked Richard Branson. He was the first person to open a megastore on Sunday in the United Kingdom in the 1980s, which was considered quite a taboo thing to do. Sundays are a day of rest. It used to be, England used to be in the 80s, a Christian country. Now it's Muslim or atheist. But it used to be quite a Christian country. And the idea of Sunday and the Sabbath and not working on Sunday was a little bit sacrosanct. And Richard Branson was the first to keep Virgin Megastore open on a Sunday. And a reporter asked him, you make all that money on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Do you really need to be open on Sunday? So Richard Branson laughed and said, well, why not? That's the answer. That's the answer for such a person. Why not? Money's money. It's what I'm here for. Finished. You've got to realize like this. The Chofetz Chaim, once he had enough on Tuesday, Wednesday, he shut the doors and he went to the Beis Medrash. Rabbeinu Yonah says, you calculate how much money you need for the day. Once you make that money, you go to the Beis Medrash. What do you do? That's your life. Your life is in the Beis Medrash. You have to leave. You have to leave in order to be able to earn a living. You've got to do it. You signed a kasuba. You're expected to earn a living. There's no way around that, etc., etc., etc. But if you haven't, you don't, well, now that I've done this, I should super invest in that business, grow the business, develop the, okay, but Vakasha, to what end? How much of your time is this going to take away from potential to be able to develop your body-soul connection? Now, if you say, well, I can find my body-soul connection at work, that's going to be very unlikely unless you put serious amounts of Torah in to be able to think like that. And when are you going to put serious amounts of Torah in to think like that? The Chofetz Chaim needed to work, so he worked. But then he stopped. That's why he's the Chofetz Chaim. And you ain't. That's the bottom line. They did it. They weren't born great. They became great. When interfacing with anything physical, you should always be conscious of your role to shuffle sanctity back to its source. All physical activity is like this. If something is outside of your remit, is bound. Asur means bound. Translated as forbidden. If something is in your remit, it's called mutter, which means untied. Matir means to unknot something. Mutter means unknotted. Asur literally means tied up and bound. If it's not something for you, pigs, it's none of your business. They're asur, they're bound up for you. There's nothing you're going to be able to handle with them, which is going to promote your body-soul complex. So leave it alone. Leave it alone. A pen, it's mutar. It's unbound. It's released. It's available to you. Use it correctly. Write some divrei Torah. Write some words of chizuk to a friend who's feeling down. Write a birthday card. Write a get well card for Bikur Chaylim. Fantastic. Utilize this. It's available to you. Move it over to a mitzvah. That's your entire life. That's your portion in this world. I got to give you a Zohar Kodesh, if I can. I got 10 minutes, right? Zohar Kodesh. This is intense. This is intense Zohar Kodesh. Third volume of the Zohar. Page Reish Chof Omad Base. 220b. You need to strap in for this. This is intense. So it's quite nice. Well, this will finish this pasuk, okay? We did one pasuk tonight. You know, when you come upstairs, Hashem asks you for some Torah, teaching some Torah. He's not interested in his Torah. He knows his Torah. What's your Torah? What of the Torah have you learned? What have you grasped onto? At least you can say, I got one pasuk in Keheles. That one, I feel as if maybe I got an idea what he meant. Oh, that's how I think about things. You got yourself a pasuk. Yeah, it's your Torah. It's your Torah. What you get. The Zohar says that when a righteous person leaves the world, he is filed past the gates of Gehenna, purgatory, so that any relatives he has that are in there can be chupped out in his merit. And while he gets processed, he chups those guys out. It's a very famous idea. It's talked about in several places. People know about it. You hear stories like that with the Bava Sali. This is the source. This is the Makor in the Zohar Kodesh, in the third Chalik, page 220b. Now, some, there are attitudes or opinions brought that think this is a very bad idea. Very bad idea. Because if you pass by those gates to chut people out, how do you know you're not going to get sucked in? Yeah, it's a dangerous place to be. You don't walk by the edge of a volcano trying to chut people out if you think you're going to fall in. Well, Gehenna essentially is, from what has been described, it's like the mouth of a spewing volcano. You don't go in there. And if you do, you've got to have one of those suits that, you know, they look like they're silvery and they can stand 1,000 degrees C like a sun. You know, you don't want to just turn up to the side of a volcano, right? It's a very dangerous place. So there's a Gemara in Brochus, Daf Chof Ches Amud Beis, 28b. And it says that when Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was on his deathbed, he was starting to cry. And his Talmidim, who were around him, said, why are you crying? Now, why is that even a question? Someone's about to die. You'd think, well, they're emotional. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gedolei Yisrael, are in charge of their emotions. They're not phased. Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg was told, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, was told about the Twin Towers. I was in South Africa when it happened. I came back to Kaila, they said, they told him. He didn't flinch. He knew it was a terrible thing. He didn't lose control for 1 second of who he is. Hillel the Elder, there was a bet for some goy to come and make him angry, Erev Shabbos. They got him out of the shower, Erev Shabbos, to ask him why Chinese people's eyes slanted. He didn't lose control of himself. He said, better I don't lose control of myself to that guy than you lose, and you lose all your money in the bet. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was not crying because he was about to die. He's crying because he didn't know which path he was going to take. Are they going to take me past the gate of Gehenna now? They're going to chuck me in. I don't know. I'm not going to be able to survive. I'm worried. I know what's going to happen. That's why the famous verse that the Goyim recite, the Lord's Prayer, we sing Mizmor LeDavid. That's Psalms 23. Hanging up on the wall there. Though I walk in the valley overshadowed by death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Whatever path I take, be directly to Gan Eden or directly through past Gehenna, I don't worry because Hashem's with me. I'm not worried about anything. You can take me anywhere. It's not going to bother me. Because Hashem's with me, even if I have to walk past the gate of Gehenna, there's no fear. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was crying because he was scared. Is my neshama with me so that Hashem, who will want me near him because I've got my neshama, will be with me to protect me from Gehenna? Or when they put me next to Gehenna for my relative's sake, will I get chucked in? That's why he was crying. That's what he explained to his Talmidim. You might think that even if a person has heeded all the warnings and he's striven to do good all the days of his futile days of his life, coming back to the Pasuk, he still might feel deep down in himself that he hasn't done a sufficient amount of mitzvahs and good deeds to protect him from this thing about walking by Gehenna to chop his relatives out. And that may be a cause for concern. It's all very well. I did lots of mitzvahs. I'm very happy with them, Baruch Hashem. But you know what? I missed that. I didn't do Shluch HaKan very well. And there's quite a few mitzvahs I never did. But hold on. What do you mean? You can't do all 613. Some only a Kohen can do. Only a Levi. Only a Bechor. Only living if in a walled city in the time of Joshua. Only, which means a city that was walled in the time of Joshua. Only if you're near Tisrael for Shemitah. Only at the time of the Beis Hamikdash. So many mitzvahs are involved only with the ten. No one can do Tariyag. No one can know it all. Solomon is telling us, I know personally, says Geheles, that if I personally, Solomon ben David, were to pass by Gehenna, where all those dangerous forces dwell, they will not be able to get me. But there may be just one advocate who remind himself of some small misdeed and hold it against me, but I've got nothing to fear. Nothing at all to fear, because Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Kol Asher Timtso Yodcha, whatever you're able to do with your arm, which means your might, your resources, your power, La Asais Bekaicha, whatever you can do with your potentials, Asay, do it. It's the Nike swoosh. Just do it. Don't think, just get it done. Can you do it? Yes. It's a mitzvah you can do. Do it. Ki ein ma'aseh v'cheshbon v'das v'chochma b'shoyel asher ata ha'ilech shama. For there is no doing, there's no reckoning, and there's no knowledge and no wisdom in the border of hell, which is where you're going. Sha'ul is the lowest depth of Gehenna. There's 380 rooms. I think I've got that wrong. 204. How many letters there are in Mizmor LeDavid is how many rooms there are in Gehenna. The last few rooms are the worst, and that's called Sha'ul, the depth of the pit of Gehenna. That's why every letter of Mizmor LeDavid protects you from one of these rooms, which is why you should sing it three times on Shabbos. The minhag used to be you sing it once per meal. The Ari HaKadosh, the Rabbi Yitzhak Luria Ashkenazi, the fountainhead of Kabbalistic wisdom in the 1400s in Tzfas, said because Shalashudas is the favor of favors, it's just the creme de la creme, it's the spitz of Shabbos, save your Mizmor LeDavids for then. Say all three then instead of one per meal. Which is why there's almost a universally accepted minhag now to recite Mizmor LeDavid three times at Shalashudas rather than once per meal. The idea being that this gives you most potency as a get out of Gehenna free card that you can earn. You know, it's a very, so every one of the letters is a room. You get the worst, most severe, most horrendous place. That's called Sha'ul. That's called Sha'ul. Now it's mentioned here in this verse. There's so the special thing is the cantillation mark, the trop, on top of the word Bishoil. Now this cantillation mark is called a Zokef Gadoil, a big Zokef. And it looks, it doesn't mean anything, it could be look like anything, it doesn't matter as long as you know how to sing it. But it's drawn on paper as like the letter L, a small case L with a colon after it. So if you look above the Aleph in Bishoil, you see a Zokef Gadol, which is like an L with a colon next to it. And that is an interrobang. In English grammar, that's an exclamation mark and a question mark together. That's the intonation you're meant to read that word with. Now what we're going to do next time, unless you want to do it now, if you're willing to wait a few minutes over time, I'll do this pasuk with you now. Let's do it and then we'll close off on 10, okay? You've got to try your best. The theme of this pasuk is you've got to try your best. If you learn as much as you can that you could do in your situation in life, you've got nothing to fear. There is neither doing nor reckoning. You are not expected to perform a mitzvah constantly, and you're not going to be called to account for not doing mitzvahs that were written in the Torah that didn't come to your hand. You did what you could do. As long as you're doing the best you can do, as Rabbi Tarfon in Pirkei Avos says, you're expected to do. The master is insistent. You've got to do your best, but your best and no more. What can you do? Then you don't need to be concerned. You're going to be asked if you acquired knowledge and wisdom, and if you are capable of achieving either knowledge or wisdom or both, then you got to be able to get it. But if you could only do one, I could only get knowledge. I could never have got, I wasn't capable of wisdom. Then that's it. We're not asking you to get wise. Your job is to gain knowledge then. You've performed to the best of your ability. Now, despite these assurances, you may still feel that if you're led past Gehenna, you might be held back there and called in. So it's preferable to dodge it. To this, Shlomo says in Keheles, look at the Zokef Gadol. Look at that Bishoil. Asher Atahalek Shama? Interrobang? Really? It's an incredulous rhetoric. Really? That's where you put it? Interrobang? Exclamation mark, question mark, Zokef Gadol? You got to read it. In the grave? You fear going to Gehenna? Don't worry. Evil powers can only affect you if you're being brought to that place because of your own behavior. If you're being brought there because of you, then you can worry. But if you're not being brought there because of you, you're being brought there for other people's benefit, your relatives, then those forces have no right to harm you. If you're there to help others, you're immune from harm. Whatever you're able to do, do with all your might. You're not going to be asked on what you didn't do. Do it. Because there's no doing, reckoning or knowledge or wisdom that you're going to be held accountable to if you couldn't have done it. And in the edge of hell that you're going to, don't worry. That's what you're worried about, don't worry. If you're there to help other people, then that's not going to be your worry. If you're there for you, then you should have thought about that earlier. Then it's too late now. Now's not the time to worry. It's time to get crisp, you know what I mean? But now's the time to do tshuva. Now, what he's going to talk about next in Yud Aleph and in Yud Beis, which are big psukim, is the concept of tshuva. And then Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tesvav, Teszain, and to a certain extent Yud Zain and Yud Ches, are all about how to do that tshuva and what people that don't do tshuva end up being. And that closes out the perek. So the idea of tshuva is coming up next. But what we got here is strong words of admonition. Keep true to your own soul. Don't lose sight of your mission. Do everything you can with every fiber of your being and you'll be fine. You'll be literally fine. They could march you past the gates of hell. You'll be absolutely fine. Your asbestos, your fire protection, is the fact you did your best. But fuck sure, no one can ask more of that. Even God won't ask you more of that. You did your best, that's fine. You need to worry. Did you do your best with it? With the pens? With your fruit and veg in your rack? Did you do that? Yes. With your tissues? Mm-hmm. With your shoes? Did you go anywhere you shouldn't have gone to? No, I didn't. Sorry. Oh, fuck, shit. It's fine. With your shirt, you walk correctly? Will you sneeze? Yes. Fine. Shatness? I've got a sticker. Says here, it's shatness, it's fine. Good. We're good. Baruch Hashem. Got to use everything you can. If you've done that, they could march you past the worst place ever. You don't need to worry about a thing. Your worry about a thing comes now in your body-soul connection. Don't mess up. Do your best. Baruch Hashem for Solomon, eh? Hashem, someone's got it completely clear and just saying totally straight. He's saying it totally straight. The problem is he's saying it so straight it's convoluted. I don't understand a word of it. He's saying it so straight, I don't understand a word of it. Live your days with your life. All the futile days on the set. Doesn't mean anything. It's because he's saying it too straight. Unbelievable, no? It's obvious. But if you're caught up in narrative, you're not going to get this. You have to unravel it. Because we're raveled up. To him, this is straight talking. This is how he would speak. He's talking to you as a Talmud. That's what comes out of his mouth. He's not trying to encrypt it. It's just, that's how he was. That's how the man was. It's just, he's talking straight. We can't hear it. Just don't know enough to understand what a man like that is saying. It doesn't make any sense. You spent over an hour trying to understand two verses. And we've only just scratch the surface of its depth. And that's by digging into the Zohar. The mystical element. It's all poshut though. There's nothing like the Torah. It's just infinite, infinite ocean of breadth and depth. Be'ez Hashem, if we can, I want to try to do as much of the next set of verses to fill up this whole chapter. And understand the concept of tshuva and why it's so important. Also, we've got a big question. How can you judge yourself as a beinoni, as an in-betweener, if you've just done a sin? That's a massive question in the Rambam that we've got to discuss. The next time, tomorrow, you know what you did yesterday. How can you say I'm 50-50? We've got to discuss that, because we're meant to see each other as 50-50. I'm 50-50. I'm not good. I'm working on it. That can't be true. Like, how does that work? We'll discuss it. Be'ez Hashem, you should have a wonderful week. A wonderful Shabbos. And any questions? Now's the time.